Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Arnold Golden and Gregory.
Welcome to Energy Matters, a show about how you can save money on your utility bills, use technology wisely, and live a more sustainable lifestyle. Here's your host, veteran energy regulator and clean energy expert, Commissioner Tim Echols.
Thank you, Scott Slade. Energy does matter, and that's what we talk about here on our show. I'm Tim Echols, the host of Energy Matters. I serve on the Georgia Public Service Commission. That means I regulate energy in our state, along with my colleagues. In the studio with me today, a couple of solar experts, and we're going to spend our whole show talking about solar, from whether you should put it on your house, where you live, policies that might impact that, changes in what's happening here in Georgia, national trends, does batteries work with solar, what's a solarized program? I mean, we're going to cover all of it. So Thatcher Young works with Velo Solar. You guys are in Atlanta, but you've got projects all over. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tim. And excited to be here.
And Don Moreland works with Solar Crowdsource, and we'll hear more about what you guys do, Don, but it's great to have you on the show.
Well, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
So Thatcher, let's go back to you. Velo, folks have heard Velo as one of our sponsors throughout the year. And tell us a little bit about what Velo's involved with and what your role is with the company.
Sure. So Velo Solar's been in the solar business about 12 years now. We do primarily C&I, behind-the-meter rooftop solar. It's most of our business. We also do a little bit of greenfield solar projects around the southeast primarily. But as you indicated, Tim, we do projects across the U.S. Cox is actually one of our largest customers, so we've just finished a megawatt project for them on their Mannheim auto auction in Chicago, and they've been a great partner of ours for many, many years. And then my role as VP of Business Development is to find new opportunities for Velo, primarily, again, in Georgia and sort of our neighboring states, but we do branch out as interest comes. We are an engineering shop as one of our greatest strengths. So some EPCs are sort of more construction focused. Our expertise is more in engineering, designing systems, whether those are just purely PV or PV and battery, which is becoming, as you indicated in your intro, more and more popular and something that I think you're going to see a lot more proliferation on in the 2020s.
Yeah, you threw out a lot of lingo there. I want to circle back with you and talk about what is greenfield, what is C&I, all of these things. Our listeners, some of them very interested in solar, some of them have it. So it's various stages of development and evolution in their thinking. Don, tell us a little bit about Solar Crowdsource.
Yeah, thank you. Solar Crowdsource is, we've been working with other Georgia nonprofits around the state of Georgia over the last 3 years on solarized programs. You may have heard of solarized programs in various places around the state, but these are group purchasing programs where we try to make the price of going solar a little bit cheaper and a little bit easier for folks. We've had 10 programs around the state so far, facilitated over 500 installations, about 3.5 megawatts of total capacity, and we're actually selling a lot of batteries now. We're a lot of folks, I'd say about 35 to 40% of the folks who go through our programs are also adding batteries to their solar installation.
You know, in a way it sounds like brokering. Is it a promotional effort? Is it a cooperative? How do you describe it to people?
It's all of the above. It's we first will engage with the community, and we'll form a coalition, and then we'll issue a request for proposal to local solar contractors to bid on the project. So we do have a competitive bid process, and also in that process, we're vetting not just the contractor, but the materials and the pricing that will be charged based on however many people sign up for the program, the cheaper we can get the price. And then together with that, we put on a lot of education programs and outreach, a lot of town halls, a lot of open house events where people can come touch and feel a project and ask questions, and you know, some social events around it too. But we also work with the local municipalities or local governments to help streamline their permitting process. If it's a city that has their own electrical utility, we'll work with them on their rate plans that may be a little bit more favorable to residential and small commercial solar. So there's a number of different things we do. Our main objective is to try to leave the community a little bit better off than what we found it, so the solar can continue to grow.
Don Thatcher, from time to time, folks will call me and say, hey, can you recommend a solar developer? And I'll, you know, give them a number of them. I'll also recommend a place like pickmysolar.com where they can put their information in, and then someone else will kind of evaluate it and get back with them. But Don, what I really like about the Solarize program, and I have really since Solarize Tybee, the very first one, is this another set of eyes. It's, you know, it's not just me trying to, you know, get out there, buyer beware, and find, okay, is this person reputable or not? You're not going to contract with someone that's not reputable. You're going to make sure that they're not cheating me, and then they're not oversizing my system. I've got this extra set of eyes, right?
Yeah, it really working with the community and local community partners lends another level of credibility and security for folks participating in the program, because we do get phone calls from customers who are not able to get in touch sometimes with a contractor, or they're looking to speed things up, and we're kind of a conduit where we can help maybe make things happen a little bit faster than they could. So we do play that role, and I think it's because it's a community-based program and we're working with the city and local community partners, then it is an extra kind of a safety valve, I guess, if you will, for people who have thought about going solar but just don't know where to start, or they don't know much about the contractors.
So Thatcher, when you get a call, as you are doing your business development, are you finding that the clients that you eventually have are, you know, knowledgeable about solar? Certainly a company like Cox Enterprises, as much as they've done through their Cox Conserves program, they know what's going on. They're very familiar. So are you dealing with novices, or are you dealing with experts like the folks at Cox Conserves?
Yeah, that's a great question, Tim. I mean, the reality is we deal with, you know, expansive number of clients, right? Some who maybe have had a business colleague do solar, and so that's kind of how they found out about it. They're, you know, got just the amount of information they were able to gain over talking to that friend or what they can find on the internet, to very sophisticated, you know, corporate customers like Cox, who have a team of folks, right, working to procure solar for them. So it really runs the gambit. But I think, as you said, you know, buyer beware, right? You know, we encourage customers who are coming to us to look at our website and try to find, you know, a business that is similar to their business. Often I'll direct them to a case study that I know of a business similar to theirs that has gone solar and what they've done. And we, I think, try to take a very consultative approach, right, in understanding how they use energy and as the primary starting place, and then looking at multiple options, right? It may be that they need to just conserve energy in their business first. And so we have, you know, our Power Info platform that helps them do that, you know, at a very detailed scale, really understanding what different systems, air conditioning is using, equipment, right, lighting, other things, to know what solar size system would be right for them, or is battery storage right for them. And then we also look at things like lighting and equipment efficiency. And so really try to take a holistic approach that's not just about selling them a solar system, but really helping them to manage energy better in their business.
Don, this term crowdsourcing, it's a popular term out there, and you use it, obviously, in the name of your company. How do you define crowdsourcing to people who asked you about it?
That is a great question. There is an origin story to solar crowdsource we don't have time for today, but it's in essence you leveraging the power of a crowd in order to get a better result in the end.
Sounds like Costco.
I'd like to, trademark infringement, but between HomeAdvisor and Costco, we cover a lot of those things that those types of services companies provide
so
for their customers.
So kind of a bulk buying power. But then with you or your folks there as a consultant, essentially being able to shepherd the entire operation from cradle to grave, so to speak, to make sure that everybody's treated fairly, that everybody gets their questions answered. Am I right?
That's exactly right. And the really important aspect of it is everybody's got to win in order for it to make sense. The contractor's got to win and come out and make a profit and do good work. The customer's got to win by making it easier, more affordable to get solar. And Solar Crowdsource and our nonprofit partners need to win by creating programs that are successful so we can replicate that model in other communities.
So you've had 10 of these so far, 11, 10?
10.
10 of these so far. When you come into a town like in Athens, Georgia, like a Dunwoody, like a Decatur, does it scare the elected officials? Do they think something's happening beyond their control? And what have you learned now that you're 10 solarize programs into this about maybe the way that you do it in terms of setting it up with the officials?
Yeah, we have had a lot of support from local officials. A number of our programs, when they do first start, there will be either a city council or a county commission resolution that approves the program and supports the program. And luckily, we haven't had to do a lot of advertising yet. We've had communities come to us. So it looks like we're going to start expanding and scaling out and doing more advertising in the near future. But for now, we've been blessed to have folks come to us.
Let's just keep this conversation going. Great stuff. We're going to teach you everything you need to know about solar on Energy Matters today. I'm Tim Eccles. Stick around.
Gas South believes in the difference we can all make, like the difference in putting people first and showing that you care. For us, our difference is saving people money with our best rates and no deposit, and the difference we make in our community by taking care of our friends and neighbors and giving back 5% of our profits to help children in need. Learn more about what makes us different at GasSouth.com. Gas South. The difference is good.
BMVW is the place in Metro Atlanta to get your used hybrid, plug-in hybrid, or fully electric car. They're located on the south side near the airport, but it is well worth the drive. Go online to look at their inventory at ev-hybrid.com and set up a time to see the vehicle or even drive it for up to 3 days. I don't know of anywhere else in Metro Atlanta that you can do that. That's ev-hybrid.com, the best deal in town. ev-hybrid.com, ev-hybrid.com. This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Arnold, Golden, and Gregory, an AmLaw 200 law firm with 180 attorneys in Atlanta and Washington, D.C. They take a business sensibility approach when advising clients. They provide industry knowledge, attention to detail, transparency, and value to help businesses and individuals achieve their definition of success. AGG subscribes to the belief not if, but how. We thank John Gornall and all the attorneys and staff at AGG for sponsoring our show. Welcome back to Energy Matters. I'm Tim Eccles, your host. I'm a public service commissioner here in the state of Georgia. You're listening to our show. You can catch all the back episodes at WGAUradio.com. In the studio with me today, a couple of solar experts. So if your family, your business is interested in solar, gather around the computer, the radio, or the Alexa, however you're listening to us, and we're going to give you some great information. Don Moreland is here. He's the president and CEO of Solar Crowdsource. Don, welcome.
Thank you.
And Thatcher Young works with VeloSolar, one of our sponsors, and they do all kinds of projects, some of them quite large. And so we're going to get into some of these projects here in just a moment. Thatcher, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Tim. Great to be here.
Thatcher, in the last segment, you mentioned commercial and industrial. And I wondered if you could kind of define that for our listeners and tell us, what does a commercial and industrial solar array look like? Or is that a type of business that is going on? And what do they normally want?
Yeah, that's a great question, Tim. So yeah, C&I, commercial, industrial, is really a classification of business, and it's kind of all the businesses you would think of. So a commercial business is one that, you know, consumers interact with directly, right? So it would be your local dry cleaner, your coffee shop, the grocery store, could be a brewery or a restaurant. And industrial is typically the supply chain for those businesses, right? So it would be a factory or a warehouse, the airport, right? It's sort of much larger scale. And we do, as you said, projects for both of those classes of business. So we just finished a project a couple of weeks ago for Lost Druid Brewery in Avondale Estates. And so it's a new local community watering hole. They wanted to have sustainability as a key part of their business. And so they put a small array up on their roof, and it contributes about 15 or 20% of the energy needs of the brewery on a daily basis. And then I mentioned in the last episode, we just finished a megawatt for Mannheim Auto Auction, one of Cox businesses in Chicago. That's an array that produces about 30 or 40% of Mannheim's energy use on a regular basis. And just to kind of give some scale, a megawatt system would supply enough energy for about 150 homes in their annual energy use. So as you said, quite a large system, right? And what's great is that we're now in a place where the cost of solar has come down to a point where it's really accessible for any business. And whether they have capital that they want to deploy for their business to own that system outright, or whether they want a third party to pay for that system and just sell the energy back to them, which is what we're doing with Lost Druid, there's so many more options in the marketplace on how you can acquire solar than there has been in the past.
Commercial and industrial type businesses, are they putting solar on the ground or on the roof? And what's the difference from a financial standpoint?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, I mean, the short answer is both. Some are putting it on the roof. Some are putting it on the ground. The cost of installation has really come down to be almost equal. What we try to direct a business to is to use an area that they aren't going to use for another purpose, right? So a lot of usually manufacturers or large warehouses, they have an expansion plan. They're only using a fraction of the footprint of their business. And so maybe a ground-mounted array might prevent that or limit that expansion in the future. And so the roof is often just sitting up there unused, unnoticed. And so it can be a great platform for solar. And then a smaller business, it really depends on the density, right? So if they're in a strip mall, you know, maybe they only own a very small portion of their roof, or if they're in an urban area, you know, they have other businesses close to them. And so we find roofs to really be this sort of unused or underutilized asset, and is really great. But in more rural communities where land is more prolific and more accessible, you know, a ground-mounted solution can work really well, especially depending on the age of the building, right? If the roof's too old, a ground-mounted solution can be very visible and be a great solution.
That's Thatcher with VeloSolar. Sitting next to him, Don Moreland with Solar Crowdsource. Don, when we did our first Solarize program here in Georgia, it was down at Tybee Island in Chatham County near Savannah. Some of our listeners may have been there. And I went down for a couple of the community meetings to promote it. As they were promoting that opportunity, that bulk buying opportunity called Solarize, they ran into some things that I hadn't thought about, you know, whether it be a homeowners association issue or maybe some of those old live oak trees down there that you didn't want to cut down that may have been blocking the array. Maybe the house was actually in the wrong direction, or maybe the individual's credit was such that they weren't able to finance that. Is that typically the four things that you run into at all Solarize programs where you're having to work through that? Are there others, or have you solved some of these?
That is, you just enumerated most of them. And it doesn't surprise me that you would go all the way down to Tybee Island to talk with people about a solarized program. I don't know if anybody has more traveled miles in Georgia than you do. The Energizer Bunny of the PSC is what some folks have said. We love our trees in Georgia. It's estimated about 50% of sites are good for solar, and the other half aren't for some reason, like shading or like if a roof facing the other direction, and a number of different things. HOAs are something that we deal with on a one-on-one basis. We are finding a lot of homeowners associations more accepting of solar in their neighborhoods. There's more data that has proven that solar not only doesn't decrease the value of neighboring properties, but it actually increases the value of the property that the solar is situated on. We work with homeowner associations to provide solar-friendly policies to allow their architectural committees to do it in a responsible way. Historic preservation societies are another thing that we run into a lot. And the challenge there is, you know, they don't want a large solar array street facing where it's going to compromise the integrity of a historic district. So there's certain rules that come to play, and we work together with the community and with the contractor to come up with ways where residents who live in a historic community can take advantage of solar, but also stay within the character of that community.
The University of Georgia has a number of campuses around our state, including in Tifton, and they have kind of an experimental energy home there sitting on that campus. On that home, they have solar shingles that they're experimenting with. Mm-hmm. They also have some very high-efficiency Toto toilets in that home, and a whole number of things that they're doing to kind of test things, as universities do. But these solar shingles, whether they're made by Dow or Tesla, is it a thing of the future? I know we they've been around a while, but we're just not seeing them move forward. I mean, what's kind of your projection on solar shingles? Because that might solve some of this HOA issue.
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of the rooftop residential market will go in the next few years. I hear Tesla has come up with a new version of their roof tiles that makes it easier and less expensive to install. The price is still up there. It's going to cost you the cost of an entire roof replacement plus putting on the solar. It's significantly more than using traditional solar modules. But aesthetically speaking, that's what people like. And as that market matures, as that technology improves, I do think you're going to see more movement into this solar shingle or tiles, if you will, which is going to do a couple of things. It's going to change the market in a way where you might see solar companies and traditional roofing companies kind of merging together to handle a whole new market segment that was never there before. So they don't call it the solar coaster for nothing, because there's always something new happening. New technologies are coming out, and we can expect more dynamic changes in the residential market moving forward.
Thatcher, in the last minute of this segment, let me ask you about this battery plus solar or solar plus battery trend that we're seeing. Don mentioned that more and more of folks that take advantage of the bulk buying through a solarized program are adding a battery. Are you seeing your commercial and industrial customers ask you about batteries?
Yeah, absolutely, Tim. The interest has gone up significantly for really two reasons. One, you can only use solar energy when the sun is out, right? So without a battery system, you're limited to, half the day, right, when you can actually take advantage of your solar. You've recently made some changes at the Public Service Commission that will help that for Georgia Power customers, right? Well, they'll receive a monthly value for their solar energy, regardless of when they actually consume that energy.
And a special shout out to my colleagues who supported me in that effort. I've really, really appreciated their support. Could not have done it without them. Go ahead.
But customers like myself living in Marietta, where we don't have the advantage of monthly netting, a battery would allow me to use that energy when I'm at home in the evening with my wife and kids, right? Even though my solar system's producing in the daytime. So it really creates almost a hybrid system that gives a lot more flexibility to the consumer on when they use the solar, not just when it's being produced.
Don, we recently had a Sonnen battery person on the show, and they were discussing the German engineering and technology. Tesla, of course, has the power wall. What are most of your solarized customers using?
In addition to the Sonnen, there's LG Chem has a good product. Eguana has a good product. And there's more battery technologies coming out all the time. The Tesla, by far and away, has been the most popular, best value, and easiest user experience.
Well, let's keep this conversation going about solar and batteries and all these things. We have so much interest in this with folks that listen to Energy Matters. I'm Tim Echols. Stick around for more great energy conversation.
Creative Solar USA is a Georgia-based turnkey installer of innovative solar panel systems. They're dedicated to energy solutions for both your home and business. With their NABCEP certified installers, they ensure their clients receive the highest quality of solar energy systems in the industry. Contact CSUSA today at 770-485-7438 or go to creativesolarusa.com.
Hey, this is Tim Echols. We talk all the time on Energy Matters about buying a used EV instead of a new one. Let someone else pay the depreciation. BMVW Auto Sales, one of our show sponsors, can fix you up. Go to their website at ev-hybrid.com to see the ever-changing inventory. BMVW has every brand, every type of EV, and they'll even let you test drive it for 3 days, show you how to charge it and drive it for maximum performance. That's ev-hybrid.com. ev-hybrid.com.
This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by BMVW Auto Sales.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Tim Echols, your host of Energy Matters. We're talking solar today. We talk solar a lot on this show because it is a great form of energy that more and more people are using. In the studio with me, Thatcher Young from Velo Solar, one of our sponsors. Thatcher, good to have you in the studio.
Thanks, Tim. Great to be here.
And Don Moreland with Solar Crowdsource. You may have heard of Solar Crowdsource. You can go to solarcrowdsource.com. Don, I want to ask you, because you have gone into little towns throughout Georgia, some of them pretty Republican little towns throughout Georgia, and you've started a solarized program, and from time to time you've gotten some pushback. Describe to me what some of these city council, and we're not going to out anybody here on the show today, but describe to me what some of these city council members and mayors have said to you, and kind of what your process has been to work through these issues with these elected officials.
Yeah, you're exactly right. We have had some pushback, but mainly from cities that have their own electrical utility. A lot of these cities, have the revenue that they get from the electrical utility covers a large portion of their budget. So any action that's going to reduce the amount of revenue that they get is something that they're very guarded against. And so when a solarized program comes into town, and the purpose of the solarized program is to help people use solar to offset their own electricity use at their own property using their own resources, the sun, then it could be seen as some kind of a threat. So what we do is we work together, we form the coalition of in the local community, and we go to this town hall meetings, we go to the work sessions, and We try to educate them about solar, about how many of their current customers are interested in solar, and about the benefits of solar, not just for their customers, but also for their grid system, and how solar can help alleviate stress on the grid during those hot summer months when electricity is so expensive.
When I first got to this position in 2010, I was sworn in at the beginning of 11, I really sensed a hostility between the utility and folks that were putting solar on their house way back in 2011. And it's something that it bothered me. I didn't feel like it should be there. I understand this perception of threat. I see that, and it's still going on today. That eventually took me to Germany. It took one of my colleagues to Germany. We came back, and we really wanted to see the utility fully engaged with solar because I'll just speak for myself here. I felt like if the utility was engaged, that they would stop fighting it for the most part, that they would become an expert at it, that and if we could figure out a way to let them actually make money with it, it would give them an incentive to do more. I mean, do you feel like that theory that I had in our state, we're not in California, we're not in New Jersey, we're not in Arizona, but do you feel like that having the utility engaged has worked here in Georgia?
There's no question about it. The work that the PSC has done over the last 6 to 9 years with Georgia Power has changed the entire dynamic of solar in Georgia. And I think the way that it was kind of rolled out from going all the way back to 2013, if I recall, the number one mantra was as long as it doesn't put upward pressure on rates, so ratepayers aren't paying more. And as it turns out, that's exactly what's happened, that the solar capacity here in Georgia, I think we're currently ranked 11th in the country in terms of total capacity installed, has been rolled out in such a way that it has not put upward pressure on rates. In fact, there's data that shows it has put downward pressure on rates. And it's also a way where the utility can gain benefits, where they are being able to procure solar assets in certain parts of the state that are in certain parts of their grid infrastructure that makes sense for them, that lowers their overall cost. And so what that has done is opened up the door to new market segments. So what I'm referring to mostly is utility scale solar, but I think now that we have seen that you can responsibly roll out solar without putting upward pressure on rates, now we're seeing an opportunity where customers are demanding more and utilities are providing more opportunities for them.
Thatcher, when you think about commercial and industrial customers, we've done the same with Georgia Power in terms of bringing them to the table. They have created these special programs. We've wound up getting solar in Georgia below the avoided cost of energy. It's actually, and I tell people this all the time, it's actually lowered everybody's rate. So not only has it not been a burden, it's actually brought rates down fractionally. I mean, how good is that?
Yeah, I think it's great, Tim, right? I mean, the reality is solar is producing energy at the point it's consumed, right? So our traditional energy grid is built on energy being produced way out in the hinterland somewhere and brought across the wires to the businesses and homes that need it. So by bringing that generation source directly to the point it's needed, you cut out all that cost and all that loss in sending energy, you know, over that distance. And
so explain line loss to our listeners.
Sure. So line loss is really the amount of small amount of energy that bleeds off into the atmosphere as that electricity goes across the wires, right? So it's sent in pulses and a little bit bleeds off with each mile that it travels, right? So with solar, because it's only traveling a mere number of feet between its generation point and its consumption point, the amount of loss is far, far less, right? And so I think that's what the utility companies have come to realize is that, as Don said, it's helped to carry some gaps, right? I grew up in the country. We were at the end of the line, right, with Cobb EMC. So every time we had a storm and the power went out, we were typically the last house to get energy back, right? Because the energy comes across that line and it's got to go all the way down to us. So if we had had solar on our house when I was a kid, we wouldn't have had that issue because the solar could have produced while we were waiting for the energy to come back down the lines. I think the other thing that the utilities have realized is that, you know, we are still happy customers, right? Again, solar produces only during the daylight hours, and so we're still getting a large proportion of our energy from the utility, and most customers want that, right? One of the great achievements of the industrial age is that you can go into any room anywhere in the world just about and flip a switch on and the lights come on instantly, right? You have no idea really where that energy comes from, but you get what you need, which is light, right? And so I think The reality is that customers are going to continue to want that. You know, they're buying more electric vehicles. They're buying more electronics. You mentioned Alexa and Nest and all these IoT of things that are coming into our homes. So our need for electricity continues to increase, right? Even though efficiency is going up, so we're using less energy to get that same electricity. But I don't see a day where, you know, you have what's happened in the cable business, right? People cutting their cable because they can stream their entertainment over the internet. You're not going to have that, I don't think, in the electricity space. You're going to continue to get a portion of your energy from solar, and you're going to get a portion of your energy from the grid, and it's going to be a great marriage.
In fact, one study, if I could just tag along to that, one study I've seen is that folks who go solar end up using about 18% more energy than they used before solar. And there's various reasons for that. You know, maybe because it's that their perception is that it's free. But what we are also are seeing are people move on to electrical appliances, electric ranges, electric water heaters, and electric vehicles. So their total amount of personal energy use is increasing, and therefore, Thatcher's exactly right. People are using the grid power more than they have before, in addition to their new solar.
We recently had Cobb EMC president Peter Heintzelman on the show, and Peter not only has been a race car driver, not only is he a pilot, he's also a boat captain. So the man can drive anything. But he was talking about the decreasing residential energy use in general and how electric vehicles charged overnight are actually helping the grid and improving it for everyone. Don, do you see your solarized customers, do you see them thinking about electric vehicles? Do you see them asking questions and maybe wanting to go from, you know, from solar to a battery to an electric vehicle? I mean, do these things go together?
Yeah, there's a direct correlation between folks who have electric vehicles and those who want solar. They want their electric vehicle to be powered by the sun, to close that loop. And so in addition to the solar, we're seeing, we also provide battery storage and electric charging stations. And I was just talking to Thatcher a minute ago, but we are also considering closing that loop. You know, if we had an electric vehicle, in addition to these other things that you could get through our programs, then you could go from a complete fossil fuel-based home to a solar-based home all in one fell swoop. There's a lot that we have to do to get there, but it would be interesting to add electric vehicles to the offerings that we have.
Thatcher, in the last minute of this segment, do you see the same thing with your clients?
I do, absolutely. Yeah, we see a lot of commercial businesses, especially putting electric vehicle charging in as an incentive to get people to come to their business versus the business next door. And so we're starting to put EV chargers and battery and PV together in a lot of our bids.
Stick around. We're going to keep this conversation going one more segment and cover solar in our whole show today. But I'm at Tim Eccles on Twitter. Our show's at Matters Radio. Don, you're at Solar Crowdsource without the E.
That's right. There wasn't enough space.
Yeah. And drop the E. And Velo.
Or just velosolar.com.
Velosolar.com. We're on Twitter at Velo Solar Energy. Mm-hmm. And that's V-E-L-O. Well, stick around. More great conversation about solar power. We'll be right back.
The electric car revolution is coming, and the choices are growing. GEM cars are everywhere. You've seen these low-speed electric vehicles on college campuses, downtown Atlanta streets, and resort islands like St. Simons and Jekyll. GEM cars are street legal, equipped with seatbelts, headlights, and a tag, and can operate on roads with speed limits of 35 miles per hour or less. If you want to know more about these electric cars and trucks, six-passenger shuttles, mobile repair service, or full vehicle wraps, go to GEMCarService.com. That's GEMCarService.com.
Tim Eccles here for Solar Sun World. No doubt you've seen solar panels popping up all over Georgia. If you want the precision of German engineering when it comes to solar, Solar Sun World is for you. The folks there understand the complexities of solar and how to make it work, from tax credits to inverters to accelerated depreciation. They'll unpack it all. They've been in business for over 25 years. To find out more, go to solarsunworld.com. That's solarsunworld.com.
Support for Energy Matters comes from BMVW Auto Sales, the only place to get your used electric vehicle in Metro Atlanta. Mohsen and his staff will loan you an EV for 3 days to try it out, and you won't be disappointed with the deal that you get there. Check out his new solar canopy while you're there. See more at ev-hybrid.com, ev-hybrid.com. Hey, welcome back. I'm Tim Echols, the host of Energy Matters. I serve on the Georgia Public Service Commission, and you're listening to a great radio show today about solar. I've got a couple of fantastic guests, Don Moreland, President, CEO of Solar Crowdsource. Don, so good to have you today.
Thank you. Hello.
And Thatcher Young with Velo Solar. Thatcher, you've got solar thermal on your home. I had solar thermal on my Winterville home here near our studio. Tell our listeners the difference between solar thermal and solar photovoltaic.
Absolutely, Tim. Thanks. So, solar photovoltaic is turning solar energy into electrons and electricity. Solar thermal is taking solar energy and converting it to heat, right? So my solar thermal system is connected to my pool. It's a technology that's been around since the 1960s, super popular in Florida and in California, but less so in other parts of the country. But it's reduced our cost to heat our pool by about 80%. And so for us, it's a really environmentally sensitive and also economically sensitive way to do that. I would love to have PV on my home. I have, as Don mentioned in an earlier segment, an HOA restriction to putting solar panels on my roof. It thankfully didn't mention solar thermal, so I slid that one through the architectural committee. But we also have a situation with Marietta Power, our utility provider, where they have a feed-in tariff. So it's $7 a kilowatt for solar PV specifically. And that really challenges the economics significantly, right? It takes what would be a 7 to 8 year payback for solar and turns it into a 15 or 20 year payback. So even a solar professional like me is hard pressed to make those numbers work on my home. And so, you know, I've been working as a customer of Marietta Power to help educate them and have recently gotten some really good information from them that as long as I don't send any of that energy back to the grid, they'll relax that $7 a kilowatt hour charge. And so I think as Don was saying earlier, you know, really as an educated consumer and an active consumer, you can work with your utility to help educate them about, you know, what's really fair and right consumer policy. And often I found that they're very open and willing to change once they're educated and once they know the value to their customers and what their customers want.
My whole life, it seems like, has been built on negotiation. I mean, we owned a car auction that Cox Enterprises eventually bought and became a Manheim auction. But there I learned the value of the give and take. That even though I thought something might be worth a certain amount, well, it's really only worth what I can get for it. So what I'm thinking isn't always reality. And, you know, throughout my career on the Public Service Commission, now almost a decade, and Don, as you work with cities, and Thatcher, as you've mentioned, working with the utility, and this is a pro tip now to you, our listeners, don't feel like that things are static and that they will never change, that you need to engage with people in a relationship, give the relationship a chance to help them learn about you, about your product. In this case, we're talking about solar. I mean, Don, I think about how much you've helped me and others, James Marlowe and others in the Georgia Solar Association, in helping me evolve in my thinking and ultimately policy decisions on the Public Service Commission. The fact that you all didn't throw me overboard because, well, Tim seems to be stubborn about this or he's not going to change about that. No, you kept working with me. You kept the relationship intact. And then as opportunities have come up, as I've been convinced that I was wrong on certain things, I've been able to to change, and I've been able to convince others to change. So, I mean, there's a lot of value in this relationship building, isn't it?
There's no doubt. You have gone above and beyond in many cases with EMCs and with municipal co-ops here in Georgia, where it's not even under PSC jurisdiction, but I have brought an issue to you about some of these utilities with their standby fees that Thatcher was talking about before with Marietta, and they really do crush the economics of solar. And it's, if you don't want solar in your community, put a large upfront fee on the cost of solar, and nobody will be going solar. So it's a very reciprocal relationship, because you say that we've helped you. Well, you've helped us by writing letters to the mayors and to the commission, and trying to educate them about the benefits of solar and how it can help benefit the grid, and how giving customer choice is actually a win-win for the community in terms of economic and development and job creation. So I appreciate what you're saying about us helping you, but the reciprocal relationship that we've established over the last few years has been above and beyond what I could possibly imagine.
And you know, the thing that's most fresh on my mind is, I mean, since I've been at the commission, solar developers, solar owners have talked to me about net metering. I've gotten various feedback from different solar folks. It seems like all the utility scale solar guys didn't really care about it. And they had and still have a lot of power in this state. The smaller guys, the folks that own these rooftop arrays that were behind the meter, were very concerned about it. You all, I think every single year at Georgia Solar events, this has come up. And I've brushed it off, and I'm just having true confessions here on the radio. I've brushed it off. I've said it's not possible. I said the community's divided. But this year, two things happened. One, I helped the Sapelo Island Community Library get behind-the-meter solar on their double-wide library. And then I started looking at the numbers, and I was very disappointed. I was very disappointed about what the financial net that they were receiving based on a $35,000 investment made by a number of very nice companies. And then I had a couple of guys catch me at the PSC, guys I'd talked to many times before. And they said, would you look at this one more time? I mean, this was the same request they've made 9 other times, at least. They were calling it monthly netting instead of net metering. That kind of caught my attention. Wait a second, I haven't really been, what is this? Is this the same thing? And I began to think about this again with the Sapelo project in mind. I talked to a few of my colleagues, got a little pushback, began to modify this plan, and we wound up changing it this year as a part of the rate case. You know, it wasn't the most perfect change in the world. I mean, we didn't allow everybody and their brother and sister to do this. We put a cap on it, but we did make a fundamental change that I have resisted for 9 years. And I just got to think that this may be the start of something incredible.
I and many of our colleagues are incredibly excited about this new monthly netting program. It's something that breaks the ice on an issue, like you said, we've been fighting for a long time. And it is a sea change in the distributed generation, the rooftop, the behind-the-meter market, and something that we've never seen here before in Georgia, which will allow folks to actually get a retail credit for energy that they export back to the utility. Up to a certain point, you know, all the flows of energy in and out are reconciled at the end of the month, and it's trued up at that time. But what you're going to see with this new program is a huge boom in rooftop solar for both residential, small commercial, and CNI, the market that Thatcher addresses, because it adds a huge additional value onto what the value that you already had with your solar array in the first place.
Wow. You want to comment on that, Thatcher? I know you've been one of those voices through the years.
Yeah, absolutely, Tim. Yeah, I'd love to say thank you on behalf of the association and the solar community in Georgia for your leadership and the leadership of Chairman McDonald in making this a reality for Georgia Power customers specifically. But yeah, just to echo what Don said, I mean, if you look at a typical residential system, it's usually 6 kilowatts is a typical size residential system. You're talking about an added $400 a year in savings for that customer. So again, you're trimming 2 or 3 years off the ROI on that system. And that's a big deal, right? I mean, that can be the difference between doing a system and not doing a system. And the reality is we don't use energy consistently at the same time of the day. You know, different businesses use energy in different ways. I have 2 electric vehicles, so we use a lot of juice at night, as you said, charging up those cars. And so, you know, being able to take advantage of the energy you're producing at the time you need it is a sea change and is tremendous for the value of solar in Georgia.
In our last minute, Don, where are we going in the future with solar?
Well, solar is going to continue to grow. The costs continue to come down, and more and more opportunities continue to represent themselves or to present themselves. So I think there's nothing but sky is the limit for solar in Georgia, particularly because we don't have a lot of natural resources here ourselves. I always say the sun is our largest domestic source of energy production, and more people are going to take advantage of that.
Thatcher, where we're going from your perspective?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot more solar, Tim. I think you're going to see more and more businesses who are trying to take action against their carbon footprint using solar as the best way and most economical way to do that. So we're really excited about the 2020s.
Fantastic to have you guys here. You can follow these guys on Twitter, Solar Crowdsource, without the E for Don's company, and Velo Solar Energy for Thatcher's company. I'm at Tim Echols, our show's at Matters Radio. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great day.
Gas South believes in the difference we can all make, like the difference in putting people first and showing that you care. For us, our difference is saving people money with our best rates and no deposit, and the difference we make in our community by taking care of our friends and neighbors and giving back 5% of our profits to help children in need. Learn more about what makes us different at GasSouth.com. Gas South. The difference is good.
You've heard about Jim Cars on Energy Matters. Made by Polaris in Anaheim, California, these street-legal, small electric vehicles go where golf carts are not allowed. Equipped with seatbelts, headlights, optional doors, and a tag, Jim Cars and Trucks are perfect for shuttles, corporate, or college campus use. In fact, Georgia Tech has over 100 of them. The new generation Jims have many options when selecting the battery type, onboard chargers, and enclosures to suit the climate. Go to GemCarService.com to find out more. That's GemCarService.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.